My name is Phil, and I am an alcoholic. Excuse my attire. I was approached about 7 minutes ago. Chances are you will hear some stories that you can relate to and some that you can't. I may get quiet at times. I may shed a few tears. I've been back in the area about 7 months now. How are you? Good, thanks. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. I've worked the steps. I'm reworking the steps. I've been diagnosed bipolar since the age of 13. I also have psychotic episodes where I see and hear things once in a while out here. I haven't had it in a long time. None of this I really paid much attention to or knew when I was, or even knew about when I was young. Can everybody hear me okay? Good. I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting was in 1990 in Morris Plains. The girl that took me in was 16 years old. I guess I was 28 at the time. And the first thing I heard was, don't drink and go to meetings. And I said, who would drink and go to meetings? You go to meetings, you go drink afterwards. I had conned my way into that house, as a good alcoholic can do, with five girls. And the end of that house was when I drank the rent money the night before it was due. And that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. But what went on beforehand wasn't pretty. Wasn't pretty at all. At 13 years old, they started putting me on medication for mental illnesses. Not knowing that some of what I was feeling was probably my alcoholism and not my bipolar, or manic depressive as it was called back then. I acted out in a lot of ways to get attention from my family. My brother's 7 years older, my brother Keith. And he was, so when I'm 10 years old, he's 17, he's out looking at colleges. Dad's on the road a lot. When he's home, he spends time with my brother, you know, doing the more older things. My sister's 2 years younger, so I'm seven, she's five, so she gets to spend time with Mom. And I'm the middle child with the middle child syndrome, however you want to align that. I played soccer since I was 4 years old. I always got good grades. And I never felt like I was connected to my soccer players, my friends, my schoolmates, or my family. I always felt like I was at a glass, looking in, trying to figure out how to be a part of it. I could wear any mask you wanted me to. I'm a very good actor. And I continue to this day to be a very good actor when my ego gets out of hand. I had my first drink when I was just about to turn 13, and it was just a little shot of beer at one of my friend's bar mitzvahs. Dave lived across the street with no reaction whatsoever. The second time I picked up a drink, I was in the Great Barrier Reef of Australia, and I was 16 years old. I was selected to for the Rotary Exchange Program to go abroad for a year. What a wonderful thing to be presented with. Wonderful thing to be presented with. It was a real gift. The prerequisite for drinking in Australia is money, and you have to see over the bar. And this is 1979. And the state beer of Queensland, Australia is 4X. So give me a 4X, Mike. 3 weeks in, I was playing with a soccer team, and we won the championship, and we went and had a party. I remember the first beer. I don't remember the 10 I was told that I drank. I do remember waking up at 3 in the morning on a bicycle in a pit, through one of those rain pits on the side of the road, on the coast of Australia in a town called Yeppoon, and I had arrived. Now, these people were sending somebody over to be a statesman for the United States. I was there. I was going around. I was giving speeches to schools and service organizations and to learn. I didn't have to go to school down there. The school's seasons are opposite, so I got there halfway through. They were going to give me full credit at Randolph High School for my junior year without really having to get grades. I was there to learn and to be social. And And after that first drunk, I spent another next 11 months in a foreign country doing nothing. Nothing but drinking, blowing off responsibilities, bad-mouthing people, waking up in my own puke in people's houses. I threw up on myself the first time. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He goes way back. You ever hear Cinzano? It's a form of vermouth. And I drank the whole bottle of vermouth. And I threw up all over myself. Nasty stuff. I mean, you're supposed to put a splash in a martini, right? It was absolutely insane. When I went down, I was a little kid. I didn't have any experience of life. I'd never done any drugs. I was still a virgin. I was a very quiet kid, still trying to find my way, still having that stuff where I didn't fit in, still trying to somehow manage, you know. Went through a few psychiatrists back then. They were trying to help me. I don't know if they didn't know or I couldn't hear or we couldn't come to terms or what, but nothing ever really seemed to help, you know. But when I took that first drink, I felt like I was the master of all I could see. It didn't matter I wasn't going to school because I didn't have to get grades. It didn't matter that I wasn't going on speaking commitments to Catholic schools with 1,500 people and I just wouldn't show up for 3 days. Now, these poor people that were sponsoring me over there had no idea what to do with me, you know. They contacted my folks after a while, but, you know, that was halfway into it before they knew they had a problem, you know. Very bizarre. My poor parents sent over a straight-laced, straight-A student, very quiet, intelligent, well-mannered and well-spoken. I was brought up British. Roast beef on Sundays. Very bland food. And what they got back was a long-haired hippie freak who didn't want to do nothing except party. And it must have been like a baseball bat hitting them. If you can only imagine. I do things so I get back to Randolph High School my senior year and you know, the offer to go for a scholarship to college for playing soccer evaporated, and I stopped going to classes. I go in the morning, check in at homeroom and disappear, and I did that for like 40 days in a row. And the teachers and all the people in the school thought, boy, Phil's out, he must be ill. This was a nice kid, you know? They didn't know that I was drinking a drug. You know, they didn't know. And they called me in one day towards the end of the school year, and they said, Phil, you know, your grades have gone from A's to C's, D's, and E's, and F's. And you're not going to graduate. And I said, well, what do I have to do to graduate? In all my arrogance, and I was walking around in cut-off jeans with the holes in them and singing Iggy Pop music. And my hair was halfway down my back. And they said, Phil, you got to sit for your exams. So I had 3 exams to sit for, and it was on a Saturday morning. I remember all the teachers came in, and I went into the high school. And I sat down, and they gave me the exams, and I wrote my name on the top of all of them, and I threw them back at the desk at them there. I said, yeah, I sat for my exams. They were nice enough to let me graduate, or relieved enough to get me the hell out of there. They sent me on my way. The good thing about graduating from high school is high school graduation parties. Which usually go on from anywhere from a weekend to a week, you know. Mine went on for about 3 months. I took Mom's Chevy Chevette and drove it into the woods once during that period. I remember going back at a future date after doing some steps because I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. And I didn't have enough stuff during this period of my life, the early 80s, to really do a good inventory on it. So I went back to some of my old friends. Like my friend Jimmy, who said I ripped the railing off his stairs and smashed it through the window of the glass over the bar. My friend George, who told me I broke into his trailer and spray-painted obscenities all over the walls of his house. I can't even imagine what I don't remember. Thank you, God, for some of that, I'm sure. But it's coming out slowly but surely. I got thrown out of this house in Morristown. Now, I've been living on and off the streets of Morristown for years. at the end of the 80s. At one point, it was a year and a half, almost 2 years, where I'd break into cars on the green or on the side streets so I could sleep for the wintertime. I was eating out of the dumpster behind the New York Tea Garden, or I was scamming where I could. I talked my way into a woman's dorm at Fairleigh Dickinson for 2 months. I slept in the cars in the parking lot there. I woke up in the woods with 6 inches of snow on me at times. All in Morris County. I tried a couple of geographical cures. I went to California with a bunch of people. Hey, let's go to California. I had no money. When we got there, I proceeded to kick one of the people out of the car and left in the middle of West L.A. because I didn't like them anymore. I was the guy who sat on the bar stool and told everybody I was an alcoholic. Now, I gotta tell you, I didn't know what an alcoholic was then, but I knew I was one. I knew I was one. When I got kicked out of the house in Morristown, I was put on the curb, and I didn't have many possessions left. I had a pair of cowboy boots, and my leather jacket, and my guitar, which had been with me forever. All the friends that I had growing up had moved on and abandoned me. I had two DWIs in my pocket, possession charge. The second DWI, I said, I'm not going to go to court for this. I'm going to run. I took my last $100, flew to Florida. Mom gave me $200 to go down, spent it in a crack house. Was there for 4 days straight. Called up Mom. She sent me a ticket, not the money, to come back, and I made it back for my court date for my DWI. I mean, insane stuff. So I'm sitting on this curb in Morristown, and it's April of 90. And rummaging through my pockets, and I know the day before I'd gotten paid $212 or $213. I was working at the Ground Round in Cedar Knolls. And I probably had, you know, a bunch of crumpled up dollar bills left in my pocket. But I wasn't feeling very good. And I called up my buddy John, who I hadn't talked to in years and years and years. And he took me up to his house in Pennsylvania, and where I proceeded to have the DTs on his couch. Really convulsive pain, shakes, sweats. He had one of those fireplaces with the brick around it, and there were snakes coming out of the wall. And he called up some friends, and luckily enough, they got some booze in me, and I called my mom. Now, I didn't have any relationship with my family for years. My father, the ex-Bobby from England, who ruled the roost with an iron fist, had proclaimed to the family that I was persona non grata. With good reason. Mom would always sneak around once in a while and flip me a sandwich here and there. Sometimes I would break into their house and get food or take a shower. But Mom made a call to St. Clair's for me, and they had no room at the inn. But I was a pretty suicidal kind of guy, and I'd been suicidal for years. I did try to take my life once before I reached out for this help. And luckily enough, Mom took me down to the emergency room at Morristown, Franklin 5, and they put me in for 8 days, where I did the Thorazine shuffle. Funny story, I ran into my old Sunday school teacher there, who they were giving electroshock treatment to. Amazing stuff. Now, Morris County at that time was giving away 30 scholarships to Center for Dick and Villa, CAI, down on 202 Mount Kemble now, they'd given them all away. And day number 7 that I was there, somebody reneged on one of the scholarships, and they said, Mr. Harris, we're going to give you a free 28-day program, but you do have to buy a big book. And Mom bought the big book for me, and off I went to rehab. And I sat and did the classes, and I sat and read Dry Drunk and Dry Drunk Revisited, and I did my first step prep, and I did my life story. And I sat down with my dad, and he said, if you're going to try and get sober, you're welcome back in the house. We'll give you a place to live. Now, my second DWI was costing me 2 years, 4 months, and $10,000, so I wasn't driving anywhere at the time. And I remember Mom coming to pick me up in the morning, And when we're driving back through Morristown to go up Sussex Turnpike to Randolph and passing these bars I've been thrown out of for life. You know, the bars I walked into where that last quarter wouldn't give me the pack of cigarettes, so I put my fist through the glass. I remember once I was up at the AMP in Randolph. Wow. I missed him by 5 minutes. I had a cast on my arm at the time. They'd done surgery, so I put my fist through one of those big 20 by 20 plate glass windows. Absolutely insane. I find it amazing this disease can tell somebody like me that I'm okay. That I'm all right, and this is normal. And for me, it was a daily way of existence. So I passed these bars that I've been thrown out of for life, and I'm going back to my family's house. And Dad's let me back in. And I got a job, and I had a contact number, and I called it. I started going to meetings. And I got a second job, and I made phone calls, and I got to meetings, and I got a sponsor who was somebody I smoked crack with on his mom's washer and dryer down in Dover, and I used to go to Dover Monday, Wednesday, when Nelson was down there, if anybody knows Nelson. My buddy Steve was down there. And I was working two jobs, and I was hitting as many meetings as I could. And I heard, don't drink and go to meetings, and you got to find a God. And I did one, two, and three. I did a partial fourth. I did a fifth on my fourth. I reached out just to family members to make amends. I didn't work with others. Except to the point where I'd make coffee and pick people up all the time and show up when I said I was going to show up. And I started getting my life back. I got my license back. I still got the receipt in my scrapbook from the final payment to the state when I went down to DMV. When I moved out of my house with my folks, and this was probably 3 years into my sobriety, I bought a company, a portion of a company, and I got my license back. And I had my first color TV. And I moved back in with my old friends in a house in Mendham. And I wasn't drinking. And I was still going to meetings, and I was still talking to people. The journey into recovery and through the things that I've gone through then took time, and they still do. That walk out of recovery at that point took some time. It took some time. We had a party with three bands and 45 kegs. And I wrote a letter to the mayor and the chief of police of Mendham inviting them to the party. And the party was the day after I got back from Amsterdam on a business trip. Amsterdam sober is a very interesting thing. I stayed out of the Austro Cafe, which was down the street from my hotel, and I stayed out of the Red Light District. And I got back on a Friday, and the party was on a Saturday. And on a Monday, I had the state police knocking on the door with papers from the Supreme Court of New Jersey. Mr. Harris needs to appear. You're under arrest for having a Woodstock-like affair. Because I was the one that sent the invitations to the chief of police and the mayor of Mendham. I went through the process, and luckily enough, we promised not to do it again, and that was that. Oh yeah, don't have a 50-50 unless you got a permit. I bought a condo up in Vernon. Got out on my own. Things are going good financially. But I'm a dry drunk now. And how I got to be a dry drunk was, I did all the things I used to do. All of them. I stopped going to my doctor for my bipolar. I stopped calling my sponsor. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped praying. The first thing that went for me was the prayer. And it took a little while. In my dry drunk, I was running a company. I go into work for a couple hours, make some money. I drive to Smiles, 2 in Ledgewood, where I would do things like buy cases of champagne for $800 while I'm drinking club soda and cranberry and spray down the dancers. I'm sober. I was a special guest referee in the Jell-O wrestling contest. My sordid behavior of lust became quite apparent. I use sex and relationships a lot in my life to boost my self-esteem, to make me feel okay. If I can make you okay, that means I'm okay. One of the many things I've used besides drugs and alcohol, I've used money, work, food. So that beautiful, wonderful day when I walked into Smiles with an engagement ring and hit my knee in beer and proposed to one of the dancers was a wonderful day. And 10 days later, I was flying her to Vegas and we got married by Elvis. And I'm sober. It took about 3 months. Of fighting. She was yelling at me for something. Lord knows what. I got yelled at every day. For me, an alcoholic out of his cups is a terrible thing. And so at 3 a.m, when she got done, and we're supposed to be driving to her sister's for Thanksgiving, she screams and calls me some names on the front porch, and I get in my car, and I drove to Hoboken, and I'm gone to go find a drink. And this is after Thanksgiving night, which is a heck of a party night. You remember Thanksgiving night. Finding an open bar on Thanksgiving morning at 4 a.m. is a difficult thing to do, but I am resourceful. And I found a bar down by the train station in Hoboken. And I ordered a shot of Cuervo and a beer. I like the bass. And the bartender's there. There's an old guy there. And there was no thought of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no thought of consequences, where is this going to take me? And there was no thought of God. I awoke 8 hours later in a pool of my own vomit in the parking garage in Hoboken. That's with almost 7 years abstinence from a drink. So the next 2.5 years are quite interesting. First time around, I didn't have anything to lose. And I had everything to gain, and the gifts were plentiful and slow in coming because my recovery was slow in coming, but it was coming. When I looked in the mirror and saw that hollow face looking back at me, going, I don't know where to turn because I didn't think AA worked for me, and there was no place else to turn before, now I really got no place. I destroyed that poor woman, and I destroyed her 2 kids. I ripped apart my company. My word was no good anymore. I was up to drinking all day long in a matter of a week. It didn't matter what it was. I had a preference. Alcohol. It's my preference. April 1st, 2001, I crawled back into a meeting up in Sussex County, New Jersey, crying. This guy, Gorgeous George, was at the door. I don't know if anybody knows Gorgeous George. My name is George. Glad to be here. Glad to be sober. Good guy. I spent the first 90 days crying at every meeting. I went down to my sister's house in Point Pleasant, where I took a bottle of tranquilizers and washed it down with a bottle of rum. And that was August 25th of 2001. And I didn't die again. I had a sponsor at the time. He was living with me. And I got surrounded by these guys who said, Phil, you got to go check yourself back in. So I went back into Sussex County Mental Health. When I got out, I had to get a new sponsor. My sponsor had left. In those 9 months, I did do my step work. Never made it through the amends phase again. And I was surrounded by folks, don't drink, go to meetings, and change. And I was miserable. And I had this guy, Ron, who was huge on service. I was taking commitments all over the place. GSRing, and I was on the road all the time. I went to Ron, and I said, Ron, I need to go through the steps. And Ron said, Phil, I don't do the steps with my sponsees. So about 2.5, 3 years into this sobriety, I'm still dying of meetings up in Sussex County. And there was a guy that was coming down here, Brian W., came to my store, the store in Andover, and said, Phil, I want you to come with me. I don't know what summer that was. Don't know what summer that was. 04, 03, 04. He brought me down here and Peter was presenting for 12 weeks. And I got a sponsor, Dan B., if you know Dan and Beth. And I actually started the program of recovery as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 14 years later. Dan spent a lot of time with me. And I took the commitments. And I worked all three sides of the Alcoholics Anonymous triangle. I did my step work with him. I did the fellowship part. I reached out. I picked up that heavy phone that I never really was good at. I'm better at it now, and I'm certainly not perfect. But Dan and his wife were fortunate enough to have to move. And a funny thing happened. I got back into therapy. I worked 2 years straight on cognitive behavioral stuff. I got to tell you, alcoholism and my bipolar, they weave like this. And I know if I'm going to be healthy with it, after trying all sorts of different ways to manage this and all sorts of different input, I got to work two programs. I got to work one over here. I got to work one over here. I need to let both parties in so they know what I'm doing with each other. I did a fist step not too long ago with a new sponsor that I have. And I am scheduled to go and do the same fist step with my therapist, which will be a first for me. You know, there's a page in the big book, you know. Then there is the manic depressive type about which a whole chapter could be written. So it's a few years ago, and I'm living up in Sussex County, and I closed up my store. I was going to go in a different direction, and I get a phone call, and it's a week before I was supposed to go on vacation in Florida, and Mom fell down some stairs. She shattered her leg, and Dad's a big diabetic, and he can't really manage his house, you know, on a day-to-day basis. I'm single. I don't have a mortgage. Just closed up my store. I can go down and take care of my father while my mom's rehabbing. They put her leg back together and they bone grafted, and the bone graft fell apart. So they had to do a knee replacement, which was scheduled for Thanksgiving. Now, the break happened in March. So now it's Thanksgiving the week before, and she decides she's going to have a heart attack. Previous year, it got certified by the Red Cross. Thank you, God. Don't know why I decided to go take that course. So then she had to go in and get the heart stuff done. And then she had to have the knee replacement. So that took about a year when I was down there. What an absolute miracle. In that year, I got to know my father, the man that I hated for most of my life. And it ended in such a loving relationship, I can't even tell you how different it is. I was there to be able to support my mom and my dad and my brother and my sister. I was able to show up. I dedicated myself to helping them and working with others. And more therapy. But I didn't know what I was going to do afterwards. Didn't know what I was going to do. I believe it was the end of December when the phone rings. And it's this company in New York who's been looking for me for months. And they can't find me. And so they called my dad to see if they knew where he was, and I answered the phone. And through no pursuit of my own, they offered me a job running their New York headquarters with a free apartment on 54th and 5th. And I said, I can't take the job for at least a couple of more months. I'm sorry. And they said, Phil, we'll wait for you. Which they did. So mom's doing better. She's doing a therapy, and dad's doing okay. And I move into New York. Get a job I never pursued, making silly money, which I didn't think I deserved. Low self-esteem still creeps in. Thank you, God. Where'd that come from? I get a call from a young lady who's in this group that I knew as a drunk. And she needs some help in my profession, helping out her sister. And I met her, you know, over the previous 6 years here and there. I hadn't been looking for a relationship. I hadn't been in a relationship for 2.5 years. And that may be the first time that I hadn't really pursued a relationship of any kind. And I hadn't pursued work. And God brought this wonderful woman into my life who was the drunken bartender at the place where I proposed. You can't make this stuff up. You can't. I saw her as a drunk. She saw me as a dry drunk. We've known each other. We became friends. And I got this wonderful relationship with this woman now that I didn't pursue. So I'm in New York, and dad takes ill, and he has to have aortic valve replacement. 85% chance of recovery. Surgery goes bad. I'm in a new job. And dad's in Newark. And the rest of the family's not really around. Mom's down the shore. My brother's out in the Poconos. My sister's got kids. My brother's got kids. And my boss says, go. I spent almost 2 complete months bedside with my father, getting paid by a job that I was only at for 2 months, with loving support from the woman who owned the company. I didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to go looking for it. It was there. And when Dad passed in front of me, I hit my knees and I just said, Dad, follow the light. That's what came over me. That's what I said. I was able to give a benediction and speak at his funeral, which was absolutely amazing. There were people in from all over the world to attend his funeral, people I haven't seen in forever. 6 of the people that showed up were those old friends of mine that I hadn't talked to in 10 years now, that I've moved into in Mendham. My best friend Terry, whose wedding I missed because I had to get checked back in to Newton Mental Health. And a carload of them showed up to give me their support. The relationships that are coming back into my life right now are pretty amazing. Before I go there, I have to tell you that my boss's son took very ill, and she had to go down to Duke University, and she has been down there since last October. And when the market crashed, I got laid off in March. But I was able to be there for her, too. And maybe that's the way it was supposed to be. I've been looking for this guy, Rob. He was my old best friend from high school. We drank together. We played rock and roll together. I stole his car. I smashed his guitar. I slept with his girlfriend. I've reached out to him through mutual friends. I found his address. I was going to fly to Las Vegas, and the trip fell through at the last minute, about 3-4 years ago. I wrote a letter to his parents recently and asked them to forward a letter to him. The funny part is he hasn't received a letter yet. He called me last Friday. Hey, Phil, how you doing? I miss you. And the doorway opened. I get to go sit down and have a cup of coffee with my best friend, Rob, and go make amends. And he's open to it. Now, I'm not doing this till I get back from Aruba, because I get to go to Aruba on Thursday, which is another wonderful gift. So I got a new sponsor here in Burnsville, and I'm back working on the A step again, and there's one that I'm unwilling to do, and we haven't discussed it. I've discussed it with him about discussing it. Sometimes I still have a God problem. It's not God's problem, it's a Phil problem, and it can bring me right back to step two. I know if I go back to step two, I might as well just go back to step one and keep on plugging. My ego can get out of check. I can still get angry. But I've also had amazing, amazing periods of serenity. Not days, not weeks, months of serenity. I believe in my heart it's only due to abandoning myself to Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to live every day as to what I think God wants me to be. My third step in my decision to turn my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over the care of a higher power as we understand Him, has two sides of the same coin. It's not that just God is going to take care of me. It means that I got to go out on a daily basis and do and act and bring what I think He wants me to bring into the world. I've done a few four steps. I've done a few fifth steps. I'm always doing six and seven. I have seven cards left in my A step. And one of them is going to be taken care of shortly. I've reached out to the rest of them except for that one that I don't want to do yet. I'm such a self-centered egomaniac. It's unbelievable. One of the great gifts I have right now is that I'm bringing a meeting back into Franklin 5, where I was locked up for 8 days. Not only am I uniquely qualified to help alcoholics through the work of the Big Book, not only do I have a support group that can help me when I get way off track and can help me when I can't answer questions, but I'm also qualified to go help somebody who's got the other stuff going on too. Some days it's rough. Some days it's rough. But I was speaking to somebody right before the meeting, and he said something very profound to me, and it's never. And while I do understand that I need to work on both these diseases separately, it was put to me that if I'm not working on both of these diseases on an ongoing basis, I'm doomed. I'm dead. The bell of truth rang out with that statement. I've been working real hard on my Alcoholics Anonymous program recently, and I've slacked off on my other program. The answer is clear. More action. Less procrastination. Hello. It's a ladybug. What does that mean? Anything good? Does it? Okay. If you're still miserable, like I was, willingness to really look in that mirror was the turning point, because when I looked in the mirror, I didn't see a human being there anymore. But I wanted to get sober, and I was in so much pain, and someone was put into my life, and it got me here. I have no idea why I'm standing here in front of you It's over. I am glad that I am. I'm glad that I got loving, supporting people in my life. I'm very grateful that I can go out and help other people. Going to Rube on Thursday with three alcoholics. One of them is my girlfriend. And I'm going to give them permission to take my inventory and beat the heck out of me. Because I can do that today and I want to do it today. My life is an open book. If anybody has any questions for me and my journey's been like, ask me and I will tell you. I'm an alcoholic and I'm bipolar. I'm left to my own devices. My life is going to be grim at best. I don't know whether I'll end up in a psych ward or a jail or dead. I don't know that stuff. I don't have a crystal ball. But I got a lot of experience in trying to run my own life, and it never worked. I do know the solution, and it is a choice. Some days I choose not to. And I know where that gets me. I'm okay being with being a human being these days. And it took me a lot of time to get here. It took me a long time to admit that I had flaws and I was okay with them. I used to be really good with other people's flaws, you know? It's okay, you know? Now I'm learning it's okay to be with me. And I'm back to the point where I'm taking other people's inventory again. But I can write on it, and I can talk about it. And if I make a harm, I can promptly admit it. Remember the first time I went out there, when I sat down, did a 10th step. I said something nasty to the guy at the store next to me, he owned a deli. And I walked in the next morning and I apologized immediately. I was wrong, I was out of line, I am so sorry. What can I do to make it right? And it was just a verbal thing. What an entirely different way to live life. Those first experiences as I walked this journey are becoming more evident to me. The more I dedicate myself to doing the work of AA and living the tenets of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more I devote my time to living as I think God wants me to live in everything, I have not found it necessary not only to pick up a drug or a drink or sex, food once in a while. I haven't had to pursue anything. I haven't had to pursue relationships. I haven't had to pursue work. I haven't had to pursue family. The gifts show up. I don't know why, but they do. It's been pretty cool. I've only been back in the area about 8 months now. You may have seen me around a few meetings, and I'm just glad to let you folks know who I am and what I am. And my name's Phil, and I'm an alcoholic, and thanks for letting me share.